Around Comics, Episode 11.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Around Comics, where every week we assemble a new panel to discuss topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and as always, I am joined by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Hello.
Our next guest is a longtime friend of the show and the artist of Scar Tissue. He is Dave Wachter.
It's good to be here.
And our last panelist today is also a longtime friend of the show from Putnam Valley, New York. He is David Price.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show, and welcome to Around Comics. If you've been listening to Around Comics for the last month, you'll know that we just finished our four-week look at the world of comics. I know that Sal and I are both relieved to have that done and ready to get on to our topical discussions. This week, we are talking about conventions. Convention season is now upon us, and it seems like there is a new convention that crops up every week coming to a town near you. We will start today with Dave Wachter. Dave, you are not just a convention goer, you are an exhibitor because of Scar Tissue. Can you tell us a few of your favorite conventions around the country and what type of hoops you have to jump through to be an exhibitor?
Well, I'll start with my favorite conventions, I guess. Well, each one is different, really. I really liked Philly last year. Wizard World Philly was a nice show, medium-sized show. I like ones where you were able to, you know, get around and talk to people. San Diego is nice just because it's so massively huge and insane. It is the show of shows, at least in North America, and it takes, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's gigantic. I mean, it would take me 45 minutes to go from one side of the hall to the other, and it's just crammed with people. Chicago, of course, the hometown show is nice. I like that one. It's pretty big, but it's still, I think, small enough for you to be able to get around and talk and chat and get to see what's going on there.
Now, from the standpoint of an exhibitor, what do you have to do to become an exhibitor?
Well, first you have to have something in which to exhibit. So you have to have a book that you're working on, and or be a part of a studio or working for a studio or something of that sort. Then basically you just have to apply, send in your application and your money. And that's it. Most of the big thing is the money. As long as they get the money, I think they're pretty happy.
You can show jelly beans as long as you're paying for it.
Yeah, pretty much. I think as long as you got the dough, then you got the space.
What's the difference, in your opinion, between shows on the East Coast as opposed to West Coast shows? Because you've done both.
Right. I just did Wizard World LA for the first time this year, last month, and I've done San Diego. And then I did Philly on the East Coast. And I'd have to say that the difference is the weather. The West Coast is just, you know, coming from Chicago and going to the West Coast, going from 30 degrees to like 65 degrees. That's the big difference there. As for the mood and the tone of the shows, on the West Coast, you're going to have a lot more of the movie people there. You're going to have, at LA, we must have had 5 or 6 people in one day come up to us talking about optioning the story. And that's something you will not have on the East Coast.
So how much did you sell the option to Scar Tissue for?
We haven't.
Let's go on to some of the things that we like about shows. Sal, we've gone to conventions together, and I know that you love going. What is your favorite part about going to a comic convention?
Well, probably my favorite part is the panels. I really enjoy sitting in on the creator panels, and not like the big, you know, DC or Marvel, you know, Cup of Joe kind of panels, that kind of thing. I mean, those are fun and entertaining, but really like the creator panels where they're either talking about, you know, the creation process, writing, drawing, that kind of thing. I find that the most enjoyable, just sort of get a inside look at that process and you know, true professionals that are doing it. For someone like me, I mean, I'm just a, you know, horrible amateur at it, but it's entertaining nonetheless. And to sort of be in a room with guys that you know, whose art you like or whose writing you like, and listening to them tell you about how they go about the craft or giving you tips or that kind of thing, to me is pretty cool.
Well, I know that one of the panels that we went to last year was the Creators Panel, which was originally going to be a Brian Michael Bendis standalone panel, but he asked Paul Jenkins and Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker to join him on that panel, and that was, without a doubt, one of my favorite parts of last year's Wizard World Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You're sitting in a room with those guys, and, you know, there's, what, 30 people in that room, and they're just sitting there talking, you know, talking about what they do and how they do it, and that's, you know, if you're a fan of their work or just, you know, in the creation process, it's certainly something you don't really get a chance to do anywhere else.
Absolutely. One of my other favorite parts of going to a convention besides the panels is going through Artist Alley. Now, most conventions will have an artist alley, and while I love going into panels and being a part of a larger group that can ask questions to a panel, I love Artist Alley because you get a lot of one-on-one FaceTime with creators from really all over comics, whether it is a small independent artist or someone like, you know, last year we met Andy Parks and Phil Hester in Artist Alley, and that was an incredible time. Now, Dave Wachter, I know that you usually set up in Artist Alley. What is the mood of Artist Alley in most conventions?
The mood? optimistically hopeful. You know, in Artist Alley, you know, you've really got two kinds of people exhibiting in Artist Alley. One is you have just artists there who are doing drawings, selling their drawings, doing sketches and commissions and things like that, and aren't necessarily, you know, they're just about their name. They're not tied to a book. Then you have a whole other section of Artist Alley, which I think Wizard is trying to get sort of rid of, and that's a lot of the small press people will be actually there in Artist Alley trying to sell their book. And that's, about two-thirds of the time I'm in Artist Alley, some, you know, Wizard World LA, San Diego, we had our own booth. So Artist Alley is a lot of fun. I mean, it seems like that's the more fun place to be when you're going around in a convention rather than going to booze. It just feels like, you know, people are a little more approachable there, and you can just, you know, stand around and shoot the bull.
Go ahead, Sal. You had a point?
Well, I was going to say, you had said that you think that Marvel seems to be trying to get rid of the small press
guys. Wizard,
Wizard. Why do you feel that way?
Because they have made, especially this year, they have made changes to the requirements of what you can do in Artist Alley. You know, if you guys remember in Chicago last year, Ronin had like 6-7 tables right in a row, mm-hmm. all with red tablecloths, the big Ronin banners, and we were all there with all of our, a ton of, you know, 45 books about, and spread over all those tables. Now, we're not allowed to have more than one table.
Wow.
You can only have up to 1 8-foot table. The best you can do is ask to be next to somebody, but there's no actual formal way of doing that. So really, you've got one table.
So that way, from a trade show perspective, which is that's basically what it is for Ronin. It's a trade show.
Mm-hmm.
You're there in the trade showing off your wares. You can't plan to set up a booth that is, you know, 60 feet long, set out all of the Ronin properties with, you know, environmental graphics, all that stuff. You really just kind of have to hope for the best.
Right, yeah. I don't know if it was due to Ronin specifically because we had so many tables at Chicago, or if they've started noticing other people doing this, but I think they're trying to push us into getting a full-size booth. You know, so in which would be really tough for Ronin, especially Chicago, when you've got, you know, dozens of books and you still only got one table. You get 1 8-foot table at a 10-foot by 10-foot booth. You're just paying three times as much.
Now, that's
well, to be fair, though, I mean that, you know, if you think of it from small press, I mean, Ronin's not a single small press, you know, creator or indie creator, and Ronin, you know, is a studio, and so you're taking up, you know, 8 tables in Artist Alley, and the guy sitting next to you who's just, you know, his independent creator doing his book. I mean, to be fair, I don't know that I can necessarily disagree with Wizard. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't seem like that's that awful of a thing, and I can understand their point of view. As much as I like the Ronin table and the huge presence you guys had, it may be a bit unfair to other people that are there that aren't taking up 8 tables.
Well, I don't really see that because, you know, everybody's paying for their table, and it is, you know, there is like a couple dozen of us, and so, you know, in essence, we're all sort of taking up our own little tables. I mean, I had half a table in Artist Alley. We just happened to throw up the same banner on each table, so I really don't see the difference other than that Wizard is seeing a missed opportunity to make $850 on a booth rather than have all those tables. But really, I mean, you know, we're not cramming anybody out. There always seems to be room in Artist Alley, and every show most of these shows I go to, there's always at least a few empty tables in Artist Alley.
Now, that's certainly true enough, and it is sort of interesting that they're doing anything in that regards to try and limit people, so...
Well, without getting off topic too much, I think that, you know, the whole idea between Ronin was to leverage a group of creators that would normally be operating completely independent, and you leverage the group to create more of a presence, and that comes in, you know, more and more in conventions than, you know, almost anything else.
AroundComics.com, your source for discussion, news, and reviews about your favorite comics and creators. New podcasts available every Monday. Go to www.aroundcomics.com.
I want to move on a little bit here. One of our guests today, David Price, has admittedly been out of the convention circle for quite a few years. So I'm going to ask David, because I know that you're planning on going to some more conventions this year, what are you looking for? What do you want to see in conventions this year?
Oh, I do enjoy the fact that I basically, if I were to go to a convention a year ago, I'd feel like one person just in a sea of other people that are all there for the same reason. Over the past year, I've made friends physically and virtually through the forums, through other podcasts, and I know that I won't feel as alone. I tend not to be real thrilled with crowds, regardless of what brought them all together. But I'd like it to be easily accessible for me to get to. I'd like the price to be affordable to me, not just to attend the show, but to also make sure I can leave with some items. But I would probably go just to be able to meet the creators. I can get comics at my LCS or online, so I really wouldn't need to buy comic books at the show. I would go for the art. I would go for to meet the artists and the writers and at least get a feel for the person behind the page.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And Sal and I had talked about this earlier in the week, that one of the things that we really love about conventions is that whenever you walk in there, it sounds really geeky, but you're kind of around your people. It's a chance that, you know, for a lot of people, once or twice a year to go in, and you are around literally thousands of comic fans. Mm-hmm. And it makes it a very easy way to strike up conversations, you know, if you're waiting in line to get something autographed or to see a creator or, you know, get an exclusive for a show, you know, it's very easy to talk to people, and that's, you know, once or twice a year that you really get to do that in the comics world.
So how often do you get to actually see, you know, people dressed up in costumes and, you know, Black Superman and, you know, all sorts of craziness. I mean, that's the other part that is the fun part of the show is just the sort of insanity that, you know, a lot of people, it seems like this is their one sort of outlet for their, you know, comic book hobby, and they can go there and be comfortable no matter what, and do whatever they want to do, and if they want to dress up or whatever they want to wear, that they don't have to worry about being judged, because, like it or not, you know,
it's the one time of year that they get to get their money's worth out of that ridiculously expensive Halloween costume.
There you go.
No, that's true.
Some other things that is a big draw for convention goers is the retailer aspect of conventions. Now, I know that there are a lot of just independent local comic shops that a tremendous amount of their yearly income is based on what they're able to sell in conventions. And that is a totally different side of the convention world. That's the home of the dollar, 50 cent, and 25 cent bins. Of any of our panel here, do you really go to conventions to score those great deals and fill out your conventions with those 25 cent issues? Sal, you?
I don't spend a huge amount of time trying to, you know, find deals. I generally have a certain budget that I'll bring, and a lot of times I end up spending that on indie books and stuff that I wouldn't see anywhere else, and the guys in Artist Alley that are, you know, trying to, you know, sell their books, that kind of thing, because I figure, you know, they're not going to have much opportunity for me to ever buy it anywhere else. I mean, most of those guys, you're not going to see their stuff in Diamond and at your LCS, maybe, but rarely. So I don't spend a ton of time going into quarter bin or dollar books. If there's certain things that I'm looking for to complete a collection, or, you know, there's something I'm interested in, I mean, I definitely will go there to find deals because you can. But generally, it's not, you know, what I spend a ton of my time at a convention doing.
Yeah, I know that you and I are the same, and that as we've gotten a little bit older, we're actually trying to scale our collections down and not fill in a lot of blank spaces. But as far as going through and finding indie books that may not be available, you know, in your local comic shop or through Diamond, I'm going to throw this over to Dave, because that's a large part of what he does. It's he spends his days at conventions trying to convince people that it's worth it to buy scar tissue. What's it like for you to have to pitch your book?
Well, imagine a bunch of people who comic creators who aren't used to conversing and talking with people in the real world, because they're usually hunched behind a computer or over a drawing board, suddenly have to go out for a weekend and become a carnival barker. Essentially, you have to find, find some sort of way to put yourself, you really are putting yourself out there, and you have to figure out a way to balance it in a way so that you're not obnoxious, but also so that you're getting people to come over to your table and taking a look at your wares, because really that's the hardest thing is not to sell. The hardest thing is getting them to stop at your table and just take a look. And sometimes you have to be a little bit obnoxious about it just to get them to come over. And I try to be a very soft sale kind of guy, but I notice from both what the people next to me do and when I've done it myself is that the harder you sell it, it seems the more successful you are. Even though it's obnoxious and I hate it myself, but those are the guys who are selling books.
Now, how about you, David Price? Whenever, you know, you get into the conventions this year, are you going to look for, you know, more of the indie titles and find stuff that, you know, it's one thing to go to a convention and find things that you can dig up at your local comic shop, but how much of an interest level do you have in finding things that may otherwise be unavailable?
I would definitely go and seek out something that I wouldn't be able to walk into the store and just grab. I would use the opportunity big time to seek out something that I wouldn't normally, well, not give a second look to, but now that I actually, instead of flipping through previews or seeing about it and reading about it somewhere else on the forum or online, if I actually have it in my hand, then I can flip through it and even talk to the person that created it, I'm all over it. I can fill the gaps in my collection later.
Exactly, and I agree with that, and I think Sal does to an extent. And you know, one of the things about conventions is that you see every level of comic books. You see everything from the, you know, color copied hand stapled little core graphic books.
They're called mini comics.
Well, okay, mini comics. see episode 8, independent comics, for more information. But you really get to see just about anything on the comic scale, from the hand assembled to the big time. And you know, one of the things in conventions the last few years is that you have the large scale booths, but Marvel has been noticeably absent. Going through a few different conventions and noticing that, what's your feeling about Marvel's change in direction and how they present themselves at conventions?
Well, you know, this is something you've talked about before, and honestly, you know, I haven't noticed it so much, and I think partially because their presence at conventions is so big regardless of their booth size. And what I mean by that is that, you know, they usually have so many panels and signings and you know, just creators there. Their booth size is something that I never really took into consideration, I guess.
So it's not size that matters?
Well, hey, you know, ask my wife. She'll probably lie and make me feel good. But anyway, the thing that, I mean, a booth, you know, you have a certain amount of floor space, and you try and do your booth up. I mean, in any business, in any industry where you're doing conventions, I mean, the biggest booths are the usually talked about, but not necessarily do the job or do any better than, you know, the smaller guys. I mean, going back sort of what Dave was talking about, it's not necessarily, you know, how flashy or how big your booth is, but how well you, once you have people in it, what you do with them.
Absolutely. And I would agree that I didn't notice that Marvel didn't have a great presence standalone at last year's Wizard World Chicago, because their panels were just overflowing with Marvel talent. And that's, I got the same, you know, face-to-face value with the creators that I would have in a booth. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I can go to any local comic shop any day of the week and see a huge Marvel section. I don't feel like I need that at a convention to know that they're there.
I think that's the other thing, too. But the one thing you have to keep in mind is this industry, the fan base, will, you know, look for anything to complain about. So I mean, that may be the one hole in the armor there for Marvel, is that they're leaving themselves open to the core fan base to wonder and question and go, why, you know, which we love to do. But overall, sure, it didn't seem to affect, I mean, it doesn't seem to be affecting them in any way.
Now, David Price, you know, as we're talking about the Marvel booth, if you can imagine walking into a huge convention hall and you see a huge DC booth and a huge Image booth and several, you know, Dark Horse, and Marvel wasn't there, would that affect your perception of them as a company?
A little bit. I don't think I'd wonder if something was wrong with them, because obviously with the movies and the toys, sometimes comics with them can be an afterthought. I would probably think that they just think they're too good to actually have a booth at the show.
No, but what if you walk in and you see on the panel schedule that, you know, from 12 to 1 is Cup of Joe, from 1 to 2 is the Creators Conference with Ed Brubaker and Brian Michael Bendis, and from, you know, 3 to 4 is, you know, Marvel Studios 2006. You know, it's...
Then I'd wonder where they're... what they're thinking. If do panels cost the creators money, or is that something the convention puts on?
I think that's something that the convention, I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that that is a draw for the convention, and the studios wouldn't be charged for that. But don't
would they get paid?
I doubt that. I doubt that any convention is paying to have anyone there. The thing that comes into play is that once you have one, and once, you know, if DC's going to be there, Marvel has to be there. If,
right.
You know what I mean? So I don't know if it costs them anything. I assume it, you know, they're paying travel expenses, they're paying hotels. I don't know that Wizards, you know, covering those costs, but I also don't know if Marvel and DC or what level it is that you're paying an exhibitor's fee. I would imagine, my guess would be that they are paying some sort of fee for that floor space. And depending on the convention, I mean, if it's a Wizard World convention, obviously it's different than WonderCon or Comic-Con. You know, San Diego, I don't think they have any problem filling that convention floor without Marvel or DC, so I'd imagine everyone there is paying something. But then again, you know, I don't know specifically, but I would imagine, yes, they are.
Well, then I would have a problem with just a panel, because if a panel only holds 300 people or so, and there are thousands of people out on the floor, why should I spend an hour to try to cram into a room where I can hear some news, whereas the booth would have the information just flowing freely?
Well, I think we're going to see... I know last year Marvel didn't have a whole lot going on. I mean, I remember when I was in San Diego and everybody was going, where's the Marvel booth? Not me personally, but I know there were a lot of people. But I think this year it might be, just from what I've seen at the one Wizard show I've been to this year, that they may have caught on to that and they might be having more of a presence. They did have a rather large booth area in Wizard World LA, so maybe that's a sign of them changing.
I mean, to me, that's a convention. If you have a booth, that's the whole purpose of for you to be there is to have the booth, and so that people can walk up to you and see what you have coming out over the next few months, and you know, aside from the swag, but just what you could walk away with as far as just information, I think would be worth it alone.
You're listening to Around Comics. It's like talking to your best friend's sister, and she's hot.
Let's move on to another topic. One of the favorite things for a lot of convention goers to do at conventions is to get sketches. And these are from creators from all over. And I'll throw this one over to Dave. Convention sketches. Mm-hmm. What do you charge? What do you think is fair to charge? And do you, as a creator, like doing them?
What do I charge? I have been charging $10. But I'm doing larger sketches now. I might go up to 15. And I spend a lot of time on them, I think. It's not just a headshot. I spend a good half an hour and I do a full body shot and then I throw in background and things like that. I love doing them. I really do. Last summer was the first time I had to go under. It's like being on a game show or something. I mean, the lights pop on and suddenly you're on stage. And you're used to drawing at your your table all by yourself or on the couch in your sketchbook, and suddenly you've got people watching you. Suddenly you've got, like, a certain amount of time to get it done. And I'm also, I do a lot of my sketching while I stand just so I can continue to talk to people. I don't like that whole where you've got the artist down at the table with their head down in the sheet of paper. I try to be there where I can be face-to-face with people and talk with people while I'm sketching. So I'm not always thrilled with what I'm able to sketch under those conditions, but I think I'm getting better at it, and I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things. It's just like it's being on stage a bit.
What's the weirdest request that you've ever had for a sketch?
I've never really had any of those weird requests so far. I don't think I'm any kind of, you know, name, I guess, that people would say, ooh, I got a weird one from Dave Wachter. I have heard of some weird ones. There is one guy, apparently, that a lot of people talk about who likes to have female characters covered in glue. So, you know, just, you know, can you do Wonder Woman covered in glue? Nice. And so that's his weird little thing, and who knows what he's done with it. And I know of people who have turned down, I don't know about that guy, but I know people who have turned down some requests just because people are asking for things that are just, that the artist feels is
not
totally
nice. Too creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Sal, what's your favorite convention sketch that you've ever gotten?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. But, well, last year at Wizard World Chicago, and anyone that's met me for more than 5 minutes knows this story, so just, you know, turn off your pod or your iTunes now, and I'll get through it as fast as I can. But last year it was Wizard World Chicago. After the show, we were there and at the bar for a while and had a few drinks, and there's always creators around. And we ended up Chris and I ended up in the bathroom at the hotel.
Completely closed.
Yes, and there were three gentlemen, there were two gentlemen sitting in the bathroom. There was sort of a lobby in the bathroom, which is strange, but there was like a little lobby, and they had taken a chair and a little coffee table and pulled it in there, and they were sitting there smoking and just talking and just trying to be, I think, away from the main crowd. And so we struck up a conversation with them, and then a little while later, Tony Moore, the artist from The Walking Dead and now The Exterminators and Fear Agent, he comes strolling in. And we knew Tony. We didn't know who these guys were. It turns out it was Rick Remender and Ivan Brandon from Rick Remender writes Fear Agent and a bunch of other stuff. And Ivan is the writer or artist on New York City Mech.
New York City Mech. I think he is the artist. Joe, send me hate mail. I think he's the artist.
So anyway, we were in there for a while, and we were laughing. We were all sort of enjoying each other's company and in the bathroom, which was strange, but whatever. And after a little while, I had asked Tony if he would draw me a sketch. I figured, you know, it was as good a time as any, and he seemed to, you know, like us, so it was, and he was happy to, and actually it was an amazing sketch. He does this, I mean, for like 20, 25 minutes or longer, we're just standing in the bathroom talking, and he's sitting there doing this sketch for me of the zombie, and it was just unbelievable. But that wasn't my favorite sketch, because about the time he finished, and he started on a sketch for Chris, in walked Phil Hester, and Phil started walking through the crowd of us towards the urinals, and I yelled out, you know, Phil, can you do a bathroom sketch for me? And being the nice guy that he is, he turns around, he grabs my pad of paper, and somebody, I think Rick Remender said, hey, man, let him take a leak first, and Phil said, oh, don't worry about it, I'll do it at the same time, and proceeded to walk up to the urinal, unzip his pants, and urinate while drawing me a sketch of Green Arrow. And so that is my all-time favorite convention sketch ever. I don't think that'll ever be beaten either.
And he did wash his hands. It was a damn fine sketch also. So
yes,
kudos
it was.
To Phil.
So,
and then what was funny is after Phil finished his sketch, he looked at what Tony Moore was doing, and Tony was, honest God, doing like these sketch masterpieces in our Walking Dead trades, and Phil looks at Tony and he goes, dude, you have got to learn how to doodle.
Yeah, they weren't sketches. I mean, they were finished penciled art. I mean, they were not, you know, sketches by any means, but then we all got kicked out of the bathroom for being loud and rowdy.
So, David Price, when you go to a convention this year, are you going to be on the lookout for sketches? And if so, what are you going to be looking for?
Well, if I can, I would not be able to leave without getting something for Renee, my wife. So I'd probably have to find somebody if Terry Moore isn't there, then I'd have to find somebody that would be able to draw the characters from Strangers in Paradise. I would probably want something along the lines of Batman or Green Lantern or nothing, probably what everybody gets, just the norm. If I bump into an artist that I know spends time on a certain character, I don't know if I'd ask them to stray and draw something that they don't normally get to draw, but I'll definitely, if I do make it to Philly, I'll be spending some time around Artist Alley for certain.
Well, it's a great place to go on conventions. It really does round out the entire comic experience there. Let's move on. We've talked about some of the things that we really enjoy about conventions, and I'll throw this one Sal's way. What are some of your pet peeves about comic conventions?
Well, you know, if the one thing that probably drives me more crazy than anything is, you know, I'm not really an autograph hound or, you know, I don't generally buy a bunch of sketches. I mean, if I buy someone's work, I'll ask them to sign it or, you know, do a little sketch if they will, something like that. But I don't usually stand in line to get, like, a bunch of autographs, that kind of thing. I stand in line to either buy something or talk to the creator. So what drives me nuts is, like, you'll be standing in line, and there'll be some guy in front of you with, like, 50 copies of the same book and getting them all autographed. And you know he's just going to go sell them on eBay or whatever. He's, you know, putting them in his shop or whatever the thing. And it's just like you're standing there for 20 minutes while, you know, the poor creator has to sit here and sign copy after copy after copy of the same book. And it's like, you know, I mean, I understand it, and the creators are usually really, you know, generous with that kind of thing because they figure, hey, the guy went through the trouble to buy them. But, you know, as a fan, you're just standing there waiting as Phil Hester signs 50 Green Arrow number ones or something, you know. And it just drives me kind of nuts. So that's probably my biggest pet peeve.
I agree. And last year, we met Brian Azzarello briefly. And before I had gone to the show, I had thrown, you know, probably 10 or 15 books into my backpack. And I was like, these are ones that I would really like to have signed. And I knew that Azzarello was going to be signing. And so I took 100 Bullets number 1 and 100 Bullets number 50. And I think before we actually got to see him, he had just finished signing 100 Bullets 1 through 50. And I almost felt guilty asking him to sign two more. What those creators have to go through is nuts with the amount of signing, especially with eBay. Dave, you, what are some of your convention pet peeves?
Well, I had, in San Diego last year, I had a guy, you know, we're there just trying to sell our book and doing everything that we can. I had a guy come up to the table, pick up the book, go page through page, read every page of the book, put it down, picked up issue 2, went page through page, read every page of the book, set it down, and walked away.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. It just, you know, I wasn't going to spend the money on it without reading it first.
Well, I'm also sorry that I had to jab my pen in your throat. Because I came so close to... there were a few things in San Diego. That was one of the things. I almost jumped over the table with him. The other thing is that we were parked next to a booth of Scientologists. And, you know, they were selling, you know, the fiction books, but they were Scientologists. They had people filling out the survey and all that kind of stuff. And they would get in front of our booth and stop people in front of our booth, and they would be out in the aisles, and they would be, people would actually, they would just assault people as they were coming in, you know, into the row, and then people would avoid them, and they'd just circle right around, and the next three booths would lose all that traffic. And that was not good.
It should be completely legal to be able to beat up Scientologists.
And we just lost a huge segment of our listening public. Sorry about
who
that.
Who needs them?
David, I know it's been a while since you've been to a convention, but what are some of your pet peeves about the convention experience?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What are some of your pet peeves with conventions?
Probably the fans. Well, not all the fans, but just... the select few that are always in front of you when you're ready to talk to a creator or get that sketch done, that's just going to sit there and talk the person's ear off and get everything that they want to know about that person right then and there. I tend to walk away from those situations. If I see that that's what's going to happen, then I'll walk away. I try not to be annoyed too much by things anymore, only because everything's going to annoy me.
Well, I would agree with the whole common courtesy thing, and that's what it is being aware that you're on a convention floor with thousands of fans and in fairly confined quarters. And that leads to my pet peeve, which my girlfriend had made fun of it on the forum a little bit this week, but if you know you're going to be in a tight, you know, confined quarters with a lot of people, it's called soap.
Yeah.
Before you go to a convention, take a shower, put on some clean clothes, you know, don't reinforce the stereotype of, you know, the stinky, weird comic book guy.
And so it's rare. I mean, it's not like it's prevalent. I mean, people talk about it like they're, you know, everyone there. But there is usually, I mean, every time I've gone to a convention, there's usually one or two guys that...
It's like, dude, come on.
That's all it takes.
It's usually hot. It's a confined area. You've been wearing, I mean, you may have been walking around for 6 or 7 hours. So, yeah, after a while, I guess that. But they do make stronger soap and stronger deodorant for these type of situations. So splurge a little bit. And if you can't get that comic that you may be looking for because you went and bought some extra strength deodorant, no one's really going to mind.
and I will thank you for it. If you walk up to me at a convention this year and say, dude, I bathed and used deodorant, I'll, like, give you a comic book.
Hey, so maybe we should hand out, like, a round comic soap bars.
Oh, wow.
At the convention.
Round comics soap on a rope. I like it.
But nobody will use it because they'll think it's a collectible.
That's true.
I'm totally
Although I don't know that
idea.
That many people will think it's a collectible.
Listen to a roundcomics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
Let's move on to some final thoughts about conventions, and I'll put Sal on the hot seat here. In a few words, kind of wrap up your feelings about comic book conventions.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I enjoy them to some degree. I don't know if they're the best thing that the industry can be spending so much time doing. And I mean that from the perspective of how, you know, what people are going to conventions. It's the same core audience that you've already sold. You don't necessarily have to sell these guys on your products. You already have, and you have for 20 years. You go to a convention and you see 25 to 35 to 45 year olds there. You don't see that many kids. Sometimes you do, but not a ton. And it's sort of the same kind of crowd. So as much as I enjoy conventions, there's a lot of them, and I think companies spend a lot of time and money and effort in going to these conventions, and it's great for those fans. But once again, you know, me being an older, you know, comic book reader, I would like to see that much effort put into trying to, you know, get new fans and get kids interested in comics, and trying to not just always sell that core audience that is getting older and older every day. But all in all, I mean, it's a double-edged sword for me because I enjoy conventions. I like going to them. I like, you know, I have friends there. I enjoy being around people that I know like comics and being able to talk, you know, for 24 hours a day, for 3 days, out of that month, I'm going to be doing nothing but talking about I do that all the time. But anyway, I'll be able to talk, you know, with other people about comics. And so I love them, but at the same time, I think there's this huge emphasis every year about conventions, and what are we doing on the other end of it for new people. You know, a convention is not the place that you're going to get new readers.
No, it shouldn't be the your biggest marketing push of the year. That should be kind of your exclamation point at the end of your marketing plan. But we'll move on. Dave Wachter, your final thoughts on conventions?
Yeah, I've never attended a convention purely as a fan. I first started going to conventions as someone who was exhibiting there. So that's my first experience of it. And I really love them. And I'm glad that the big guys spend a lot of money going to conventions because they draw in a lot of people who hopefully come over to our table and then pick up some of the small guys' books. But the things I love the most about it are probably the fact that I get to see... I have a certain group of friends that I call sort of my convention friends, and I see them maybe once or twice or three times a year, depending on how many shows they get to. And these are other people out there who are, small time in the trenches with me, and we get to go, and I get to see them when I never get to talk to them. So I have finally a chance to meet up with them and then go to nice after parties with a bunch of other people and, you know, rub shoulders with Joe Quesada and Brian Michael Bendis while I'm chatting it up with the guy who writes JoJo the One-Eyed Dog. And also I love seeing a lot of the people that I've met online that I would have never have gotten a chance to meet before, you know, people from the forums like the CGS forum and all the kinds of people that that I really become friends with in the virtual world. You actually get to meet them in the real world. And I got to say 99.99% of the time, they've just been fantastic people, and I really enjoy that.
All right, David Price, your final thoughts on comic book conventions.
Well, I guess mostly make it worth my while in the sense that I can read, if Joe, I don't see why Joe Quesada needs to be the guest of honor, again, if I can read his bullpen moments or go to his forum and things like that, because I know where to find it. I'd rather see them spotlight some lesser known creators, like spotlight Ronin Studios for one weekend, or just something like that, that would switch it up a little bit. I know it's a big show. I know Marvel or DC or Dark Horse are going to have something going on there that might make me want to check out their titles that I'm not already checking out, but make it a platform so that somebody else actually gets their time to shine.
I agree. My final thoughts on conventions are that they are unique in the convention world. I don't think that there's any other medium that is able to put on a convention with the type of atmosphere. Even like a Star Trek convention, you know, there may be a few actors there, some people that were behind the scenes. You look at, you know, a sports convention. Yeah, they can put up a panel of athletes that will do autographs. You look at any other sort of convention. Only a comic book convention has, because of the size of the industry, from small to big creators, are you able to walk onto a convention floor, meet just about anyone you would ever want to, and actually have face-to-face time with them. And you throw into the fact that, you know, like Dave said, that now with the internet forums and message boards being such a huge part of what we do as fans, that you can meet people that you've only emailed or responded to on forums. And the modern day comic book convention has turned into a meeting place for fans from all over the country and even all over the world sometimes. So it's something that I really look forward to the once or twice a year that I go to them. I hope that they continue, and with the great success I've seen in the ones that I've attended, I don't see them going anywhere too soon. So that will wrap up our discussion on comic book conventions. If you have any comments that you would like to send us, please address them to info@aroundcomics.com, and we would love to hear from you. That means it is time for Wire to Wire Comic News.
These are your top headlines for the week of March 27th, 2006. Johnny Repeat kicks off revolution. Publisher Elizabeth James announced that her new maxi media company, Citizen Press, plans to deliver its first dose of entertainment to the people in July 2006 with the release of Johnny Repeat, a 96-page black-and-white graphic novel, a sprawling mystery woven into an intense human drama packaged into a non-linear narrative. Johnny Repeat is a story of second chances that debates the eternal question: if you woke up one day in your past, remembering everything leading up to the present, would you make a new future? Johnny Repeat will premiere at the San Diego Comic-Con this July with a cover price of $12.95. Brian Wood sells out again. Brian Wood's latest comic venture, Supermarket, his first title with IDW Publishing, has been a smash hit. Issue 1 of the four-part Supermarket debuted in February and was met with wide acclaim by critics and fans alike. The issue quickly sold out, despite the fact that the title's initial orders were overprinted by 30%. Issue 2 has also been sold out through Diamond Distributors. As a result, IDW is going back to press on both issues. As an added bonus, the second printings will each feature a new wraparound cover design, which when combined will make up one large Supermarket poster image. Planet Comic-Con canceled. Kansas City's annual Planet Comic-Con show will not be held this year due to a scheduling problem. The Overland Park International Trade Center is not available this spring. Planet Comic-Con will return to a new trade center space March 17th through 18th in 2007. Hawaiian Dick, director announced. Frank Carassi, director of such fare as The Waterboy and The Wedding Singer, has been announced as the director on the film adaptation of Hawaiian Dick by B. Clay Moore and Stephen Griffin. Johnny Knoxville was at one point attached to Hawaiian Dick, although that is now up in the air. Rex Mundy comes to Dark Horse. Dark Horse is pleased to announce that the acclaimed murder mystery series Rex Mundy will be coming from Image to Dark Horse this fall. Rex Mundy is the quest for the Holy Grail, told as a tale of sin, murder, and redemption in an alternate history Europe where magic is real and the Catholic Church never lost its grip on power. Current Rex Mundy publisher Image will continue the series up through issue number 18, with the first Dark Horse issue arriving in August. A Rex Mundy feature film is in the works through Dark Horse Entertainment. Tokyo Pop and HarperCollins set to partner. Tokyo Pop and HarperCollins jointly announced that the two companies have formed a co-publishing agreement which will see the HarperCollins young adult and middle grade novels turned into manga, as well as hardcover selling and distributing the entire Tokyo Pop line in North America. As of mid-June, HarperCollins will begin selling and distributing all Tokyo Pop books to the North American trade book market. All back office functions, including customer service, warehousing, billing, and credit, will be performed by HarperCollins. More Tokyo Pop news. Tokyo Pop, the number one publisher of manga in the U.S., has teamed with uClick, a leader in mobile entertainment, to bring Tokyo Pop mobile manga to mobile phone users worldwide. This unique, downloadable manga application plays Tokyo Pop manga titles in their original multi-panel format on mobile phones. Rayner to join Galactica crew. Dynamite Entertainment announced that artist Nigel Rayner will be joining writer Greg Pak on an all-new Battlestar Galactica comic book series. Also set to join the group are cover artists Steve McNiven and Michael Turner, with more to be announced soon. May listings from Alias Comics. Alias Comics announced their May 2006 lineup, including the continuing adventures of Hyperactives and the debut of Blue Water Studios' new series, The Blackbeard Legacy. This month, Alias Comics offers 160 pages of Armor Quest, collecting the issues number 1 through 6 for readers for an unimaginable price of $3.50. Go to AroundComics.com for the full list of Alias Comics titles. Roy Thomas returns to Red Sonja. With Dynamite back on track with the monthly Red Sonja comic book series, and both the Red Sonja one-shots having sold out, the company has released images and information on a trio of Red Sonja comics and collectibles shipping to stores in June. Leading the way is a one-shot featuring Roy Thomas's return to Red Sonja. V for Vendetta is tops in bookstores. Alan Moore and David Lloyd's V for Vendetta graphic novel topped the BookScan list of graphic novels sold in bookstores for the week ending March 19th. Alan Moore's Watchmen graphic novel also came in at a robust number 23 on the BookScan list this week. It was the only other non-manga title in the top 45 sellers. Retro Rocket to the rescue. Flying in under the radar in a devastating sneak attack, Image Comics' new series Retro Rocket, written by industry veteran Tony Bedard and illustrated by Jason Orfalas, has captured the hearts of readers and critics who wrote it off as just another American manga. Retro Rocket number 1 is a 32-page color comic on sale now, and Retro Rocket number 2 is available for advance reorder and will be in stores in April. Subsequent issues are available for pre-order through Diamond Previews. Star Wars Legacy to offer a 25-cent issue. More than 100 years have passed since the events in Return of the Jedi and the days of the New Jedi Order. There is a new evil gripping the galaxy, shattering a resurgent empire and seeking to destroy the last of the Jedi. Even as their power is failing, the Jedi hold on to one final hope, the last remaining heir to the Skywalker legacy. Star Wars Legacy number 0 features a story by John Ostrander and Jan Dersema, with art by Dersema and Sean Cook. The special issue arrives on May 17th and will retail for only 25 cents. Now you can vote on HeroClix. Some people collect them simply for the figures, others for tools to the game, but no matter the reason, one thing is clear. HeroClix collector sets are a popular commodity. These sets, produced by WizKids and voted on by the fans, allow collectors and players to get their hands on some of their favorite characters who might not otherwise appear in HeroClix releases. This year's nominated titles include Mike Mignola's BPRD and Matt Wagner's Grendel. The other titles in competition are Wildstorm's Astro City, DC's Metal Men, and Marvel's 2099. Go to AroundComics.com to learn more about this story and how you can vote. These have been your top stories for the week of March 27th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, go to AroundComics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
All right, and that's this week's news. Let's start at the top. Johnny Repeat to kick off with Revolution Comics. Any thoughts on Johnny Repeat? Interested? Dave Wachter?
Yeah, sounds interesting. That's all I can say. I'll definitely, if they're going to, I'll be at San Diego. I'll go check it out.
I just love the line, a sprawling mystery woven into an intense human drama packaged into a non-linear narrative. That took me a long time to untie that from my tongue. So, sounds interesting. Sal, you going to pick up Johnny Repeat?
It might be something I'd be interested in, yeah. I like the idea of the concept of it, remembering everything, or going into your past and remembering everything. If you'd change things, I know there's some stuff in my past I'd probably change.
Sure, it's a common theme and something I think a lot of people talk about. It's interesting that they're going to launch this title at San Diego Comic-Con. It seems like that's starting to be a model that a lot of people, before it goes to general shelves, they will launch it at a convention. So,
well, especially that one. I mean, that's like like Dave was saying, that's where you're trying to option something. That's the place to go. So.
Sure. Brian Wood, this guy is one of the favorites of the show. I know that that Sal and I read local and DMC and supermarket and for a demo and just about anything else that we can get our hands on. And I couldn't be happier that an artist like Brian Wood is getting some serious, serious success. Now, what caught my attention out of this story was that they sold out of supermarket despite the fact that they had already done a 30% over the initial print run. So it's not like they're underrunning this and selling out. David Price, have you read Supermarket yet?
No, I have not.
It is good stuff. Sal, are you a fan of the book right now?
Yeah, you know, I didn't pick up the second issue yet, and hopefully I will be able to, but I did read the first one and liked it a lot. It was nothing what I expected, really, but, you know, I'm a huge Brian Wood fan. I think that he's one of the best indie guys out there right now. His story writing ability is pretty impressive, and his ability to do different things, you know, he's very versatile, too, so good for him.
Yeah. Dave, we've talked about it. What would be the one term that you would say about Supermarket 2?
Camel toe? Swedish camel toe? It was, yeah. It was, hello!
You just have to read issue 2 to know what we're talking about. So good work by Brian Wood, and we're looking forward to seeing more camel toe. Planet Comic Con canceled. As we ended our talk about conventions, this is an annual convention in Kansas City that lost its booth space, but will be back in March of 2007. And I think that shows how competitive a lot of the convention scene has gotten as far as reserving space. Now, David Price, I know that you're from New York, and you did not go to the New York Comic Con, but some of the horror stories out of that came from them not being able to reserve the entire convention for. Any thoughts on that?
I'm not privy to the business side of it, it did strike me strange that the convention itself was going to be held in the lower level for New York and not the main floor, which would have would have been more than sufficient for everybody that wanted to be there, and for the exhibitors as well as the fans. It does bum me out whenever any convention isn't coming back. Like recently, Wizard World with Boston. I don't, since I'm complaining about having the travel to go to one, you know, to have one in your own backyard that you can't go to is not good.
Well, there are a lot of conventions out there, but the big ones are a little bit far and few between. And I hope that New York is able to rebound after this year. I heard it was a great convention. It's just they didn't have enough space. So we'll see what happens with that. And then with Wizard World Boston, which, you know, had, you know, lukewarm results. We'll move on to, Hawaiian Dick announcer or a director announced. And I will tell you that the hardest part of that part of the news story was saying that Johnny Knoxville was at one point attached to Hawaiian Dick.
Oh, I think that actually wouldn't be a bad choice for that book. Have you read Hawaiian Dick?
No, I haven't. But just when I read the press release, that sentence kind of caught me off guard, and I had to stop from chuckling to record that.
Johnny didn't do a good job.
Well, I love that B. Clay Moore is getting some stuff optioned. I know that you're a fan of Battle Hymn, and so am I. So I have not read Hawaiian Dick. Sal, did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I enjoyed that book very much. It's you know, it's a Hawaiian detective story. The art is fantastic on it. It's strange. It goes off in a really bizarre, supernatural sort of way. But it was entertaining. It was a lot of fun to read. I'm a big fan of B. Clay Moore stuff.
He's a guy that we did not talk to at Wizard World Chicago last year that I was really disappointed that we didn't. B. Clay, if you're listening, which I doubt if you are, we're going to be on the lookout for you this year, so get ready. Rex Mundy is moving from Image to Dark Horse. Are there any Rex Mundy readers out there? And silence falls over the crowd.
You know, I keep hearing really good things about that book, and I've heard it's excellent. I just haven't had a chance to pick it up yet, but that is something that I plan on trying, because I have heard really good things about that book.
Well, it's one that's on my list of to get, and I know my local comic shop, Dark Tower, has it, and I'm probably going to pick it up this week, so hopefully I'll be able to give you a quick little review next week. Okay, Sal, this is one that I know that you wanted to talk about. It is the Tokyo Pop HarperCollins partnership. Run that down for us a little bit and give us your thoughts on how important this partnership is.
Well, for Tokyo Pop, it's a huge move. I mean, basically what they're doing is HarperCollins is licensing Tokyo Pop various books, and these are best-selling generally young women's novels. I think some of the titles, and I don't know if they've been announced yet, but I'm thinking along the lines of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and that kind of stuff. I mean, so huge built-in audience of these best-selling young women's novels. They're going to license those to Tokyo Pop to recreate those stories as manga, and then HarperCollins is going to take the manga and publish and sell those for Tokyo Pop. So, I mean, that's a huge partnership for them. I mean, it could potentially be an enormous windfall of business and hopefully new readers for them, because you're taking the, you know, what are already best-selling novels and using the power behind that. So I think it's a great move for them to do. I mean, I'm not probably going to read any of the stuff they produce, but what they are producing is more than likely going to have a great chance of selling well, because it already has a built-in audience. And I was on the Warren Ellis message board when this story kind of broke, and he had brought it up and thought it was a huge deal, and it is. And I put out the question of, well, you know, how come nobody has done this with, like, Harry Potter? You would think it would make a perfect property to do this sort of thing with. And I guess, you know, it all depends on the author, because J.K. Rowling is not a fan of the comic book medium, so she won't allow it to be licensed for comic books, at least to this point. I guess she can sell it, you know, on any other damn thing, but comics aren't worthy of it.
Well, eventually there will be a big enough check that will happen. I hope, because, you know, like you said, there's a huge built-in teen girl market in the HarperCollins properties. You know, taking, you know, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and turning it into a manga. Manga's already proven that it can appeal to the teenage girl market, so I see this as a huge deal. Well, Dave Wachter, do you have any opinions on this deal?
Manga.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things I was going to say, though, too, is that this could actually be big enough where, you know, Tokyo Pop could be selling this manga in Japan, as opposed to the other way around.
Well, good, because then maybe we'll see how Japanese translates from English.
Enjoy that.
let's move on to a little bit more Tokyo Pop news. They are launching their UClick, is the company they're partnering with, to have downloadable manga to your cell phone. David Price, I don't know if you're a manga fan, but if you could download comics to your mobile phone, is that anything that interests you?
Anything I can download to my mobile phone is of no interest to me. I use my phone as that. My phone has a camera and I can play games on it, but all I do is talk to people on it when I'm in my car.
Wait, you mean you use it as a phone?
As a phone, as what it was intended to do, yes. I'm familiar with UClick because they work with one of the comic strip syndicates. I don't know if it's King Features, but UClick brings me Foxtrot every day to my mailbox. If I could get it in my email, I'd be all over it.
Sal, any interest in downloadable comic books, manga or otherwise, to your cell phone?
Not to my cell phone. I don't see, I mean, the screen's so small on cell phones, I don't see how I'm going to read a comic book on it. I don't know. I mean, I could see maybe you could do like single panel comics, you know, cartoons on it or something, but I don't even see how you would read it on a phone, unless that's not the purpose of it. I mean, is it download it to your phone and then plug that into your computer and read it? Because I just don't see really the point of trying to read a comic book on your cell phone.
Yeah, the only thing is I just see the commuter market. You know, being here in Chicago, I know that there's enough people on the trains that are just begging for ways to distract them while they're on the train. But we'll jump over to the V for Vendetta story. This kind of ties in to what we're talking about with manga, which it seems like manga is a part of every week's news. V for Vendetta actually topped the book scan sales in March through bookstores. Now, this doesn't take into account what V for Vendetta sold in local comic shops or through online orders, but I think it's pretty important to note that V for Vendetta and Watchmen were the only two quote-unquote comic book graphic novels that topped the top 45 list on BookScan. Dave Wachter, V for Vendetta being top in BookScan?
I'm all for it. The more American comics you can get in there over the manga, I'm happy to see it. To tell you the truth, the more I hear that these were the only two things that weren't manga and were in the top 45, just depresses the hell out of me. It really does.
Well, it's I don't want to say it's not us against manga, but
I'm just fighting the future here. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to fight the future.
David Price, have you picked up your V for Vendetta trade paperback yet?
I have not picked up the trade. I remember reading issues 2 and 3 when Vertigo first put them out years ago after they were released in the UK, and it's a story that's on my get to list. I just haven't gotten it yet.
Well, here's a question for you. I know that it was the top in BookScan, but if you were going to buy a trade, do you buy them from Barnes & Noble or Walden Books or Borders? Where do you buy your trade paperbacks from?
I'll give the business to my local comic shop first.
Good.
If I've I have bought a few from in stock trades because the price was great, and I will occasionally, if I'm in Barnes & Noble with Renee or looking for something, I'm not real keen on buying something at cover price, especially a trade. So if I get some sort of discount, I might, if I'm there, if it's convenient for me. But for the most part, I'll go to the comic shop first or online.
Well, I think that you're with a lot of comic fans, and that shows me that the sale, with them being number one at BookScan, shows me that a lot of non-comic book fans hopefully have been buying this at the bookstores as opposed to the local comic shops. Let's jump over to the story about the Battlestar Galactica comic book. I know I've got at least, you know, two people here that are Battlestar Galactica fans, and myself and Dave Wachter. Sal, are you interested in any of the TV properties coming over into the comic books world? Is that any sort of a draw for you?
Not really. I've never been any of that licensed property stuff. I've never really been a huge fan of. I mean, I've always, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but I've never really read any of the comics. I've read some, but not many. TV show stuff just doesn't really interest me. I mean, it's a TV show. How, you know, what does it really need a comic book also about it?
It's not just a TV show. It's the best TV show on.
Well, I would argue that all day and night, but even if it was the best TV show on, I think I would just watch the TV show. The licensed property stuff, I've never really seen very good ones. I don't know if that's because
They've got some pretty good talent on this. It's Greg Pak is writing it, and that gives me some hope that they're actually putting a little bit of an onus on the quality of this. Dave Wachter, your thoughts on Battlestar Galactica and what you think it's going to be as a comic?
Any hope? I'm usually with Sal on this, but on this one, I mean, this is Battlestar Galactica. I think right now is the kind of thing that could really translate over better than, say, like the CSI series or something like that. The problem I have with a lot of these things is the way they're handled. You get that they're always trying to either try to repeat exactly what was on television or do something that's totally, totally just doesn't even fit with the show. I don't want to see the exact same story told that I can watch on the television show. And I also don't want to see people trying to make every character look exactly like the actor that's on the show. And that's one of the things I just can't stand as far as the art goes on so many of these things, is that they're so busy. You can tell the guy is just sitting there pausing the show, drawing the guy, and it comes off stiff and forced. And I think if they can take it and they can say, this is a comic, this is its own thing, let's not be tied down to the show, but let's also be true to the show, then as far as Battlestar Galactica goes, I think there's enough material there that it could really be something good.
I hope so. And as far as the licensing goes, the only one that I have read that I enjoy is any of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Angel. They actually did a pretty good job of spinning that off of the show and continuing the show from there. Let's move on to Alias Comics. I think the most notable thing in this story is that they're going to be offering Armor Quest, which is a 160-page trade, but it's not going to be $9.99. It's not going to be $14.99. They're offering at $3.50. Sal, do you think this is a direct answer to manga? And I don't want to fixate on that, but to start to see comic companies offering larger collections at discount prices, do you think that is kind of the reason that they're doing that?
Well, I think they're trying to find new ways to get things out there and make a name. Especially the smaller kind of companies, they have to try and compete. So this is one way to do that. I don't know if it's necessarily to try and compete with manga necessarily, because it's going to be it's sort of a one-shot deal, you know what I mean? They're not going to keep coming out with, 18 volumes of this story at $3.50 each. They're using it as a marketing tool. In conjunction with this, there was another story that came up late in the week that I wanted to bring up, if you don't mind. Go ahead. It was AIT Planet Lar. There was a new graphic novel they're coming out with called Continuity. And they are selling it. I think it's coming out in June. But they put out a PDF of the entire thing online that you can download and read the entire thing months before it'll be published. Which
What's it called again?
It's called Continuity.
Did Joe Q like dismiss it as not important? go ahead. I'm sorry.
So it's interesting to see these companies trying different things. I'm glad that people are trying different ways of getting things in front of you, in front of readers, to try and, you know, because I downloaded the PDF and I started reading it, and I'll probably finish reading it, or I may not finish reading it, but it may lead me to go buy the paper, you know, trade. If it's good, if it's something I'm interested in, I probably would go buy it, even though I have a PDF of it. So, you know, both of these things, you know, for $3.50, hey, I'll pick it up. You know, it's six issues for $3.50. How bad could it be? You know, if I like it, great. It introduced me into a new series. If I don't like it, it only cost me $3.50.
And if you don't like it, but you know someone that does, it's $3.50. It's not like you have a bunch of skin in the game, and you can give it to someone that you think will like it.
Yeah, it's the cost of one comic, almost anywhere else.
How sad is that?
Yeah, you know.
Okay, Roy Thomas makes his return to Red Sonja. Any Red Sonja fans in the house? Once again, there's the
crickets.
Where's the cricket noise when we need it?
It'll be interesting to see if Mike Omien is writing this, because I did like Omien's initial run on Red Sonja. So I'll have to find out who the creator is who the writer is. We'll report back on that next week once we take a look at it.
Does this Red Sonja series have any ties to the Marvel Red Sonja series from years ago?
I honestly have no idea. Was Roy Thomas on Red Sonja? Not literally.
I don't know if Frank Quillen would let him.
In Marvel's run. I'm not a huge Red Sonja fan.
No, neither am I. I know it was around the time when I believe Roy Thomas was working for Marvel. I don't know if he was editor-in-chief or if he was just a writer. But it does date back that far.
That could have been then... connection there that he was
makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's our job as hack journalists, that we'll find out when Roy Thomas worked on Red Sonja, and we'll report back on that. Retro Rocket, another new series, and not to beat the manga horse to death, which we have a tendency to do. What caught me on this story is that people have written it off as yet another American manga, and it was kind of a scary sentence in that people are actually generalizing some American comics as manga, just because this is, you know, a big robot, you know, type comic book, even though it sounds like it's a little bit more than that. So anybody interested in checking out Retro Rocket?
Yeah, you know, looking at the cover, I probably wouldn't have been, but reading the little tagline about it and what the story's actually about, it's right up my alley. I like the idea of it, so I'll probably check it out, but I could certainly see where people, you know, I'm not really a manga fan, I'm not, you know, into giant robots necessarily, but this one actually sounds pretty interesting.
Well, speaking of picking things up on a whim, looks like Star Wars Legacy number 0 is going to be out there for a quarter. David Price, would you drop two bets on a Star Wars comic?
Well, seeing as I was also suckered into buying the Detective Comics dime issue and also the Fantastic Four for less than a dime, although that was a good story, I probably would give this a shot.
Dave Wacker, are you going to pick up Star Wars Legacy?
Probably not. I mean, I don't know. It's a quarter. If it's sitting there on the counter, I might throw it in the bag.
Just to check it out, see if maybe there's an up-and-comer on it. Sal, you going to pick it up for a quarter?
Well, yeah, you know, I probably will, only because John Ostrander is writing it, and I think he does space stuff great, so it might actually be be really interesting to check out what he does in the Star Wars world. Even though
I know that's one of the things that you harp on about space stories is that everybody draws it the same. It always kind of seems like it's the same story. So I know that you look at space stories with a little bit different eye than some folks.
Yeah, there's a certain detachment in it also. I mean, a lot of times it's hard to care about characters that are, 10 light years away or whatever, and on an alien planet. And I think sometimes writers try and make things too alien, where it's actually hard to understand. I mean, everything, I was talking about this before, everything has to have a strange name. You know, you're not speaking an alien language, yet every common, household device has a strange name because you're trying to write a space book. And it just doesn't seem to make any sense. Concentrate on writing a good story regardless of the setting.
I think that as you and I have gotten older, both, and hopefully we've gotten more mature, but I think that we like stories that are a little bit more grounded, on the streets, that kind of stuff. And I think that both Daves are kind of in that vein. So we'll see how it plays out. Now, the next story is one that I think that Sal put in the news just to make fun of me because he knows that I'm a huge HeroClix geek. Now, David Price, I happen to know that you are a huge Matt Wagner fan and a big fan of Grendel. Are you excited that there may be, soon a HeroClix Grendel?
Seeing that this would be my first purchase from WizKids would be for these HeroClix. Yeah, I think I could be moved to that. I'm excited.
One of the things that's interesting about the collector sets is that the one that just got announced a couple months ago was Invincible, and it was put up on the Robert Kirkman forum that he was imploring all of his fans to go to WizKids and vote for Invincibles as a collector set, and it totally swung the vote, and in the HeroClix community, it was not even close to being the one that most of the HeroClix players wanted to be voted in. But because Robert Kirkman swung all of his listeners over to vote for it, it kind of won in what I think is a major landslide. So it'll be interesting to see if like Mike Mignola gets active and posts on like the Hellboy forums to go vote for BPRD. So. And no one else cares except for me.
Such a nerd.
Sorry, man. I think they're kind of neat. The little plastic statues of all these characters. But yeah, I don't have enough time in my life to play that game. So
well, I need more tchotchkes on my desk. So
yeah,
well,
same thing.
I supply Sal. Sal and I work together, and most of the, all of the HeroClix on his desk are, provided by me. My Sundays, just to give you a look into my sad life, is that I usually wake up on Sundays and, read the Sunday paper with my girlfriend, and then I go to the comic
girlfriend.
Shop.
He doesn't have a girlfriend. He's
I have. Who do you think records those bumpers? I've got proof. But, I go to the comic shop at, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I play HeroClix from, 1 to, literally 4:45. Run home to record the podcast for 2 hours, and that's, my Uber geek day. So I'm excited about the HeroClix collector set, but I'm going to get off this before people really start to think I'm as big a geek as I am. Let's get into our top of the stack.
Top of the stack.
That's right. It's top of the stack. It is our chance to tell you about one or more of the comics that we have read in the last week that we would like to pass along and suggest to you. Sal, what was your top of the stack this week?
My top of the stack this week was the Captain America 65th Anniversary Special, written by Ed Brubaker, with art by Javier Pulido, Marcos Martin, Mike Perkins, and Frank DiArmada. It's a throwback story of featuring Cap and Bucky and also Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos. It's set in 1944, World War II, obviously, and this group of commandos is jumping into behind enemy lines, trying to stop the Red Skull from unearthing some sort of mysterious object. It's could easily have been a very typical one of these issues where they're kind of throwaway stories that don't mean anything. You see them a lot of times in the annuals and the double-sized specials and stuff like that. But I have to say, I'm a huge Ed Brubaker fan. I love what he's doing with Cap and Daredevil, and I can't wait to see his X-Men stuff, and I loved his Sleeper stuff. But I have to say, this book may have impressed me more than anything I've ever seen him do as far as showing me the quality of writer he really is. After reading this issue, and maybe it's just me, but I really think he could be writing anything. In this story, it's basically six chapters, and like I said, it's a pretty typical, you know, sort of World War II story. They're behind enemy lines and that kind of thing. But woven into it is also a little bit of a romance story between Bucky and this anti-Nazi revolutionist woman that they meet. And this short little sort of love story that he writes in here between these two characters is as good as anything out of, like, Casablanca. I mean, it's just perfectly set up and a little cheesy, but, you know, if you are a bit of a romantic, you'll probably enjoy it. But the thing that probably impressed me the most was at the end of the story, there are six chapters, at the end of it there's an epilogue, and they go back and take this entire story you just read and set it, not set it, but make it relevant to today's Captain America. I don't want to give anything away, but basically the end of it, it weaves it back to what's going on with Cap today and foreshadows his future, which I thought was really impressive. Like I say, if you read it, you'll understand what I'm talking about a bit more. But for something like this, like I said, is usually kind of a throwaway issue. I was really, really impressed with it. So that's my top of the stack.
Great. Looking forward to reading it. It's about two down, so hopefully I'll have it done by tonight. David Price, what is your top of the stack?
The sixth issue, which concludes this week, Batman and the Monster Men by Matt Wagner. It's basically the first part of two six-issue series Wagner is doing. It's also titled Dark Moon Rising. This arc features, Wagner says that it's basically Batman Year 1.5. He's still fairly new to the game. This is his first time going up against, supernatural beings. He's not beating up mobsters or thugs. He's beating up basically monster men. They're mutated humans brought to you by Professor Hugo Strange. It's basically, I guess, it is their first. It's Batman and Professor Strange's first meeting. The art's great. The story is nice. If anybody remembers reading Faces from Legends of the Dark Knight from probably about at least 10 years ago, it's along that vein. It's Wagner. Wagner is great at drawing Batman, at drawing Gotham City. It's probably the best character Wagner can work on that's not created by Wagner. As I said, it concludes this week. The first six issues are almost done. I do not know when the follow up will come out, but I'll be there regardless. But granted, you're going to have your friends that if they like Batman, they might pick it up. But it's not your typical Batman story, and it's really well done.
Great. I love that there's a lot of the offshoot Batman stories that are getting picked as top of the stack, that and Batman Year 100. So it's nice that those kind of splinter stories are at the high quality they are. So I hadn't been interested in picking it up, so, you know, on your recommendation, I probably will, and that's what top of the stack is all about. Dave Wachter, what is your top of the stack?
Yes, this week I chose The American Way, issue number 2 of an 8-issue limited series. It comes from Wildstorm, their signature series line, and it's essentially about an iconic group of superheroes who are actually government funded. It takes place in the early 60s, and the group has actually been designed as a propaganda tool in order to bring basically hope and confidence to the American people in the turbulent times that are the 60s. And what we get to actually center around is a former car salesman who is hired. Well, he's not a car salesman, he's a car company pitch man, I should say, and that he would design the whole pitches for a large car company, and now he's been hired to basically direct the publicity of this government-funded propaganda supergroup. And in the first issue was mostly a lot of action and a lot of setup of what was going on. In the second issue, we delve into the background and really the mechanics of how the whole thing happens and how it really works. And we also get to see the creation of a new hero to be added to the ranks and the controversy that comes along with that. It's written by John Ridley, who is a Hollywood screenwriter. And the pencils are by Georges Gentil, I'm guessing on that. It looks like a French name, so I'm guessing with a French pronunciation. He's done a lot of work. He did some, notably with Marvel, he did the Gambit miniseries, and Bishop, the Last X-Man. Also, it has inks by Carl Story and Ray Snyder, and Rob Lee does the letter. A colorist is Wildstorm FX. So I really enjoyed it. The second issue was even more powerful than the first. It's really delving into some very interesting issues. Of course, it's set in the early 60s, and I like the way they're using the time period and what's going on there. The art is solid. He's clearly got an Alan Davis influence, but he's not a copycat, so it's just very well done, and I'm really enjoying this book, and I can't wait to see where the story goes from here.
Sal or David Price, have you picked up The American Way?
No, but I will now.
I did read the first issue. I hadn't picked up the second one yet. I did like it. The first issue, it kind of, I mean, it was good, but it I don't know. Something about it felt done before, and maybe that was just me. I don't know. But
well, we'll just say, and I'll look at Dave here. The second issue gets darker.
Oh
no! and so just pick it up, and you'll know what we mean. But I enjoy American Way. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the story plays out. I love the idea of the main character being out of the group, being a marketing person. If anyone liked the Christopher Priest run on Black Panther, there's some comparisons in there that, you know, kind of the main character in Black Panther was actually a government employee that had to work alongside Black Panther. And if you enjoyed that kind of, you know, angle for a story, American Way is pretty interesting. Go ahead. Okay, my top of the stack this week is Queen and Country number 29. Queen and Country 29 picks up almost a year after number 28. Greg Rucka had gone on, you know, hiatus from the comic books to write two novelizations of the Queen and Country franchise. If you're not familiar with it, I'll tell you that writer Greg Rucka and several artists have combined to create a series that it looks into the darkest corners of the British Ministry of Intelligence. Queen and Country is an ongoing story about people that guard the walls of society and all the sacrifices that they have to make for our safety. Now, all the characters in Queen and Country are flawed and realistic. And, you know, for those who say that there aren't enough strong female lead characters in comics, you need look no further than Tara Chase. She's a strong, independent, and at times reckless and misguided character, but she's always a hero. She has to be in her job because her job is who she is, no matter, you know, at certain times whether she wants it to be or not. Now, the stories in Queen and Country are meticulously researched. They've got plots that are as real as the evening news. Rucka's whole world of characters are people that you can care about, you can root for them, or you can despise them. If you like espionage mixed with politics, action, and human triumph and tragedy, Queen of Country's your book, and Sal will accuse me of like getting paybacks from Greg Rucka because I love this book so much. And I told a few people on the forum that I was going to go on a little bit of a rant this week. And you know, I go to my comic shop every Wednesday and help sort through all the diamond shipments. And as I'm pulling out, you know, like, you know, 45 issues of this and 60 issues of that and 20 issues of another comic, you know, I get to Queen of the Country. I've been waiting for issue 29 to come out for months after the second novel was released. And my comic shop, which carries a lot of comics, they move a lot of comics, they had 3 copies of Queen and Country. And I looked at at Mark, my manager of the local comic shop, and I was like, dude, you gotta tell me there's more copies of this. And he's like, no, it's you, another guy, and I put one on the shelves. So this book, it's not like it's being written by a hack writer. Greg Rucka is an amazing writer. Chris Samney is doing the art on this book now. So if you've read Capote in Kansas, which was written by Andy Parks, great novel, awesome art, please check out Queen and Country. If you're an espionage fan at all, this book deserves your attention. So that is my top of the stack this week.
My goodness. I hope you've gotten that out of your system now. The whole
I
Queen
love
and Country
that book.
Just I've been reading it in trades. I haven't been picking up the single issues. I've been reading it in trades, and it is extremely good. I can't deny it. I do like that book a lot. But I think, you know, and we talked about this, I think one of the things that hurt that book is that he stopped writing the book and wrote 2 novels that you sort of, you know, are forced to read in order to continue the story. I understand the guy is a writer and he wanted to write books, but I don't necessarily want to read 2 novels about that comic book to have to keep up with the story. So I think it might have hurt it a bit to take a year off and then come back because, you know, when I come back to it, am I going to know what's going on? Am I, you know, how much have I missed? And then I sort of feel like I'm strong-armed a bit into having to read 2, you know, novels about Queen and Country.
Well, the novels were great, and I think that you'll be able to catch up. If you don't read the novels, I think you'll catch up in the series pretty quickly. You know, but if you like Greg Rucka, I mean, this book is his passion. He pours himself into the series. And I think that he, because it's his creator-owned book, that he felt like if he was going to tell the story that he wanted to, he needed to write these 2 novels and put the comics on hiatus. For integrity of the creation, that's great. I'm glad he did it. I understand that you couldn't do that with most other books. It's like, you know, DC is never going to put Batman on hold so someone could write a novel to bridge 2 stories together, but it really is a great book. So, you know, I hope, if you know, once again, it's not for everyone. It's not a superhero book, but if you're an espionage fan, think of it as, you know, like the best of Ian Fleming mixed with Tom Clancy, and it's really a great series. So, you know, that, Sal, that will be the last time that Queen and Country is my top of the stack, I promise.
I doubt it.
For this episode.
Yeah. Sal, do you have any announcements for us?
I just did want to say we redesigned the website recently, so, you know, go take a look at it, see if there's anything there you want us to change about it or anything. Other than that, no, I don't think I have any other announcements.
Well, we had we had one of our real good friends of the show today put a thread on our forum about voting at Podcast Alley. Who could that have been? David, thank you very much. We appreciate it. I forget at the beginning of the month, please go to Podcast Alley. There's a link on our forum for it. Please vote for our other friends, Comic Geek Speak and Comics Cast, our good buddy Bruce R. Check out Maxim Glory's new podcast. It is the Pop Cult Online. One of our regulars, Tom Caters, I believe, is going to be on a future episode of that.
What? So I thought we had him signed to an exclusive.
We basically said that he could be on any podcast except for Comic Geek Speak.
Okay.
So that's that's a joke, Brian and the guys. You can have Tom for a day if you want. We just get him back later. There are a lot of great comic podcasts popping up out there. We appreciate you spending your time listening to Around Comics. We are going to continue to try and bring you the best in comics news, opinions, and reviews. I believe that is it for this show. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dave Wachter. Thank you, David Price. And thank you, Brian Salazar, for everything that you do for the show. You guys have a great week, and we will see you next Monday with another episode of Around Comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.